Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for October 8, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, the EPA has extended the public comment period on its rule that would give the agency oversight over intermittent streams. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason says don't jump to sign up for new farm programs until you have the latest information. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter wheat, December, 586 and a half, down 1 3/4. March, 589, down 3/4. Soft December wheat, 507 and 3/4, up 1 1/2. March, 519 and a quarter, up 1. December corn, 343 and a quarter, up 2 3/4. March, 356 and a half, up 3. May, 365 and a quarter, up 3. July wheat settling at 373 and a quarter, up 3 1/4. November soybeans settling at 935, down 5 3/4. January, 942 and a half, down 5 3/4. March, 952, down 5 3/4. July, 967 and 3/4, down 4. October soybean meal, 329.80, up 2.80. October soybean oil, 32.88, down 8. October live cattle, 166, 17 and a half, up 40. October feeder cattle, 242.35, up 87 and 1/2. And October lean hogs, 108.50, and they're up 127 and 1/2. And those are Wednesday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says wet weather will occur in the lower and eastern portions of the Midwest through early next week, and then much better drying and field working conditions will evolve. Ideal field working conditions are expected in the northwest half of the U.S. Midwest over the coming week. Rainfall potentials in the October 16th to 22nd period will be favorable for net drying in many areas, and farming activity will move forward around some brief and light precipitation events. U.S. hard red winter wheat country is still facing much improved soil moisture following today's through Friday's rain event. Rain totals of 1/2 to 2 inches will occur across many important production areas. Our first ever WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference is November the 24th at the Marriott Hotel on the Illinois State University campus in Normal, Illinois. We've got the latest on farmland values, and we'll spend time looking at crop insurance under the new farm bill, as well as the pending ARC-PLC decision. And we've got marketing panels on corn, soybeans, and cash grain. The cost is just $25 and includes lunch and parking in the hotel parking garage. Get your tickets now at 800-898-1065 or on our secure website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we had, we had December corn up 2.75, November soybeans down 5.75, and I believe that makes the corn bean spread, that ratio at what, about 2.75?
Yep.
And the lowest level in 3 months, actually.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I would attribute a lot of it to the fact that we're harvesting beans pretty heavily back in most areas today, which brought some harvest pressure into the bean market. Not so for the corn market at all. We're just kind of sitting on that. And so, you know, we also have a lot of squaring that's going to go on before Friday's report, people trying to figure out where they truly belong. And, you know, some people who are just spreading themselves to protect in case we get a surprise, like you talked about this morning. Mm-hmm. So many people are negative, it's possible we could see a positive report.
Well, I mean, if technicals are to be believed, sometimes technicals signal stuff in the marketplace that we really don't know yet. And four straight up days in the corn market, and maybe the biggest four-day rally in corn this year. I mean, I haven't looked at it exactly, but I would bet you it's among the top three, might be telling us something.
Well, it's possible. I mean, you know, there's no question. I think that once we get into the report, then we'll find out exactly where we're at. You know, the big problem we're still going to have is the lack of accuracy when it comes to acreage because of the FSA situation. You know, not having to certify without a penalty is going to make it much worse. In fact, when I talked to the USDA today, they said, do we really have to put out a report on Friday? You know, yeah. Because they're working with the FSA trying to figure out what they're going to do and trying to project some ideas. But it makes for certainly a lot less security when it comes to believing the numbers that are going to come out.
We might not know the number until January.
That's exactly the truth. That is especially this year.
So that puts more emphasis probably on guesses for yield. And they're all out there on the table. One survey at 174.7, mm-hmm. Which is a massively big number. But it may not be the biggest number we see this year.
No, and Landworth just came out and raised theirs to above 175. And so, you know, I guess we have to look at it. If it bears out that here in Illinois we come in at 194 or 195, and you talk to the guys in Iowa, and if you go south of 80, just phenomenal numbers. North of 80 for a while, you get into, you know, some really outstanding numbers. You get into northern Iowa, and early corn coming off of Sandy Flats was bringing 180 to 190. Guys weren't happy with that. You know, so if you take and put these two together, let's say that they end up at 175 and we end up at 195. That's mm-hmm. 185 bushel to the acre in the two largest states when it comes to corn. So you can have some poorer numbers in other states, and it's still going to hold things up. There's no question about it.
Speaking of corn, harvest also underway in Brazil.
It is. You know, it's interesting. You know, the corn harvest is under, but they also have bean harvest going on in the state called Roraima, which is not the largest state, but it's been growing and growing in size. And they actually have a growing season. Isn't it hard to believe? In Brazil, they actually have a growing season that's equivalent to the U.S.
That's amazing.
It is. That's how big that country is. I tell you, when you fly across it, it is astounding. But they've been dry, so they're only getting about 30 to 36 bushels to the acre. You know, the main harvest down there isn't going to start until we get into late December, which is earlier than normal for us, just primarily because of the fact that they planted more short maturity beans. They've already have 17 cases of rust reported. Normally, we don't hear the first rust case come out in November, so it really makes me believe that the government is going to go forward with what they said, and that is the no bean time frame is now going to expand. It was June to September. It's going to go April to September.
And a producer is a producer is a producer, no matter what hemisphere they grow, because they're behind.
Yep.
The South America producer is not sold very much either.
No, he really hasn't. He's only forward sold 12% for this year, you know, compared to 31% last year. You know, I think some of it is that they're waiting for the U.S. dollar to climb more. primarily, you know, the higher the dollar goes, the more value it is to them, because beans and corn both are priced in U.S. dollars and then paid to them in their local currencies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a tough one. You know, they're 3 to 4% planted on this year's beans, which is ahead of last year. They're about 50% planted on corn. So the only concern down there is that the weather is starting to look a little drier.
So there has been some other fundamental news in the marketplace in Germany and Russia.
Yes. Yeah, I'll tell you, the Germany news is not good, because the factory output actually dropped 4% in August. And it was only expected to drop 1.5%. Now, there's a lot of speculation that the reason that they're not putting out as much is that they are very, very concerned about ending up with excess inventory because of how fragile the Eurozone economies are and everything else that's going there. Then you look at Russia, and Russia comes along, and they gave a preliminary approval to compensate anybody who's affected by the Western sanctions within their country, and then also to seize all assets in Russia of countries that have imposed sanctions. So, you know, this is interesting. It's being heavily debated that it's against international law and against the Russian constitution. So, maybe their constitution doesn't mean much, just like ours doesn't seem to be very much at times. But the reality is, with really fragile economies over there, the rise in the U.S. dollar doesn't only hurt our export business. You know, it really hurts the world economy. Crude is priced in dollars everywhere in the world. So, you know, as the dollar climbs, so does the cost of energy and all the related goods that crude is used for. This is not really a good thing for an economy that's fragile. Added costs, you know, when they've got quantitative easing, is just really bad. And one of my clients was in a local elevator here this last week, and he said there were four guys in there from Japan representing Zenno. Zenno happens to be the grain elevator we went to down in when we visited New Orleans a couple years ago. But they were very busy asking him tons of questions, you know, like how much is rent and how much is land worth and what are you doing and blah, blah, blah. So he said when he had a chance, he asked them. He said, I just asked him one question. What they thought of our corn and bean prices. And he said all four of them looked at him and said, way too high.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you, Jackie.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Have a great day.
You too.
Take care. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stewart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stewart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack continues to take the railroad industry to the woodshed. Vilsack says railroad officials should have anticipated this year's bumper harvests and been ready with sufficient rail cars for delivery. Speaking on Nebraska Radio Network, Vilsack says the rail industry is behind and they need to catch up. While two of the biggest railroads claim they're investing in more staff and equipment, Vilsack said the moves are not coming quickly enough as farmers are already beginning to harvest crops. The Environmental Protection Agency has extended the public comment period on the waters of the U.S. rule from October 20th to November 14th to provide the public time to comment on the expected release of a Scientific Advisory Board report on connectivity. EPA has faced criticism for posting the 350-plus page proposed rule far ahead of the SAB's completion of its review of connectivity science. That science is the basis for the proposed rule that will give EPA jurisdiction over intermittent streams. So far, the agency has received more than 415,000 public comments on the rule. Meanwhile, a few Republican lawmakers are speaking out against the rule. Representative Bob Gibbs, a Republican from Ohio, called on the EPA to pull the rule and act on guidelines set in the bipartisan bill, the Waters of the United States Regulatory Overreach Protection Act. And Senator Mike Johanns, a Republican from Nebraska, said the EPA extension appears to be politically motivated, calling it little more than election year politics from an administration worried about retaining control of the Senate. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Join us November 24th for our first ever WILL Egg Farm Assets Conference at the Marriott Hotel on the Illinois State University campus in Normal, Illinois. Our on-air analysts will be all there talking about corn, soybeans, and cash grain marketing. And we've lined up experts from the U of I College of ACES to take up farmland values, crop insurance, and the ARC-PLC decision. The cost is $25 and includes lunch and parking in the hotel parking garage. Get your tickets now at 800-898-1065 or on our secure website at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. At the moment, farmers and landowners are confused about the farm programs. USDA says they can now start the process of getting ready to sign up. As Todd Gleason reports, they might want to wait to do that. It might be better to hit a website to learn how the farm programs will help manage variable income over the next five crop years.
There's a website. It has a couple of addresses, but for our purposes, let's go to the easy one, www.farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, where landowners can find farm program training materials. It's a farm program toolbox. University of Illinois Ag Policy Specialist Jonathan Kappas says landowners can use to calculate how the new federal farm programs will impact their individual farms. However, he thinks it might be easier and quicker at the moment to take a broader county-wide view.
Here's the simple thing. Part of what we've developed, and so there's multiple aspects of the tool. And I think the first thing that most people are going to look to use, and I think that the thing that is most convenient to use, is called sample farms. We're calling it sort of the 5-minute analytical review for your county. You go in, you click the button that says sample farm. It takes you through to a map of the United States. So you pick your state, either click on your state or use the pull down the drop down menu. You pick your state, you pick your county, and what it will do is generate a sample farm. This is not your farm, this is not anybody's farm in that county, but it looks at all the historical data, it looks at the planted acres in the county, and it creates this example or sample farm based on that data. And then, you know, it'll show you for this county, we've got X number of acres of corn, X number of acres of soybeans, X Y of wheat. And then those are the acres that are run through the model into the programs. And then what it does is calculate expected or estimated payments based on that acreage for that sample farm. And you click just into a new tab and it'll show expected payments for 1 year for Arc County, 5 years for Arc County, an average over 5 years, and do the same thing for ARC individual, same thing for the price loss coverage and the supplemental coverage option. And then the last screen will give you the optimized. So what's the most optimal program based on the modeling for your farm over the next 5 years?
Or in this case, for the sample farm in the county of choice, no matter where it is in the United States, for the most part, over the five-year life of the farm bill. This last point, that's extraordinarily important, says Kappas.
This is a five-year decision. And when this decision's made, it doesn't get changed for 5 years. So a lot of the analysis and a lot of what goes into this decision isn't just what a price is doing today. And it isn't always just what prices are going to do for the marketing year of 2014. What do we think we're going to do over 5 years? And so we provide that information. And the quick way to do it, sort of even just the benchmark before you start entering your own farm's information, just to get a sense of what programs look like in your county, is this sample farm.
The online farm bill tool, again, go to the farmdocdaily.illinois.edu website to find links to it, or go directly to the tool through the FSA website. The direct address is fsausapas.com. That stands for United States Agriculture Policy Analysis System, fsa.usapas.com. The online Farm Bill tool allows a broad overview of the programs and the potential payouts based on sample farms by county, but also allows individuals to input all their own information to see how their own farms fare over the life of the bill in each program under different commodity price scenarios. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at cash grain is Amy over at the Andersons. She is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Amy.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Wonder how far along producers are in their pickings in Champaign County.
We actually were just talking about that. We think by the end of the day today, we'd put it close to 30% on corn and maybe 25% on beans.
So they're moving right along, and there will be a little window of time when they're not going to be able to pick, I think, because it's going to be raining.
It appears so. It looks like we've got very good chances for Friday and 60% chance tomorrow, it sounds like. So probably have a little break here again.
So when producers call and hear the prices, and there has been a little bit of a rally in the last 4 days in corn, what are they saying?
Yes, sir. On the rally, we actually have bought a little bit here, corn and beans. We think that that's probably the right thing to do. But when we dip below $3 and $9, we're not seeing much selling at those levels. So I think that's a little bit harder to swallow. Basis has stayed where we've been at here for the past week or so, but we do continue to look for that to erode as progress is made, so with the yields we've been hearing.
And I suppose in your meeting you've also been talking a little bit about what Andersons expect might happen on Friday's reports?
Yes, and we don't expect anything too positive. I hate to say that to guys, but just, again, with looking at the crop size right now, I guess we're not looking for anything major to bump us up at this point.
So corn and beans, both a bearish tone on Friday.
Yeah, we think so, which we think the trade's probably expecting that to an extent, so hopefully it won't be terrible for us, but we'll see.
Do you think that USDA might take a crack at lowering harvested acres off the FSA data on Friday?
I think it would be justifiable. We'll see if that happens, and they could do that, but with the yield that we've been seeing, I don't know that it's going to be that big of an adjustment altogether in total production.
I'll tell you what, though, what might surprise is the demand side of the equation on the WASDE.
Sure, yep, and I guess that would be our saving grace at this point because you guys are going to be growing a good crop this year, so demand would certainly help us.
And there's certainly been some indication that demand has picked up in the corn market, especially with the livestock feeding and the like. So what about your prices today?
You bet. Prices going home tonight are going to be $3.14 in corn. New crop, D's 15, $3.65. Fall beans, $9.09. Fall 2015, $9.34. Cash wheat, $4.86.
Thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you.
I'll be back in about 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. It's National Fluffer Nutter Day. The sandwich was first created in the early 20th century after marshmallow cream, a sweet marshmallow-like spread, was invented in the U.S. During World War I, Emma Curtis published a recipe for a peanut butter and marshmallow cream sandwich, which is the earliest known example of a fluffer nutter. It's also National Pierogi Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1823, the Erie Canal was inaugurated at Albany, New York, upon the occasion of the first passage of a boat into the canal, although the entire canal was not yet completed. About 40,000 people were present for the occasion. In 1871, the Great Chicago Fire broke out and destroyed over 17,000 buildings and left almost 100,000 people homeless. It was usually blamed on Mrs. Kate O'Leary's cow kicking over a lamp. However, in 1997, the Chicago City Council looked into the evidence, both new and old, and passed a resolution exonerating Mrs. O'Leary and her cow. But many still believe the cow was guilty. In 1906, Harry Day was born, an American nutritional biochemist. He helped develop the fluoride additive used in toothpaste to combat tooth decay. Over his lengthy career, Day also evaluated the health aspects of food ingredients, principles of food safety and nutrition. And in 1919, Congress passed the Volstead Act, which enforced the ban on the sale and consumption of alcoholic beverages, marking the beginning of Prohibition. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's play a game of Simon Says. That's remnants of tropical storms, Simon. Does Simon say that there will be haves and have-nots when it comes to harvest over the next several days?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Simon says that we will have a considerable amount of rain delay from Kansas through Missouri into the Ohio River Basin. Those areas over these next 3 days will see quite a bit of rain. That's not all bad news, though. There are a number of areas in hard red winter wheat country in Kansas and Oklahoma in particular that are really quite dry. And this rain from Simon will be extremely helpful in improving the crop emergence and establishment across those areas. But for the lower Midwest, as everybody knows, not so great news. Certainly some more delay in farming activity likely. And there's one more storm system that comes in behind Simon that will bring additional rain late Sunday into early Tuesday morning. And that will produce a fair amount of rain across the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest again. But the good news is, once that second system is out of the way, we should have several days of dry and warmer weather coming across the Midwest for the balance of next week.
Are the maps coming into alliance from the various models for that October 16th through 22nd event?
I think things are looking a little bit more confident at that point, yes. We always have to be careful at this time of the year because this is, you know, we're in transition from summer to winter, and things happen very quickly in the atmosphere. But right now, I think there is a little more consensus that we will see the warmer and the drier bias after Monday of next week, or actually after Tuesday of next week. And it'll last for about a week, with a couple of interruptions in there, and then look out for the end of October and going into November. I think we'll go wet again.
What about temperatures? Will they be seasonable?
We will see a warming trend take place next week. Until then, it will cool off a little bit as we go from Friday into Sunday of this week, and we'll see temperatures slip into the 50s and 60s for highs and lows back into the 30s and 40s, so we will not see good drying while it's raining. But after the rains pass, I think we will see a fair amount of warm-up that will take place, and temperatures should rise above average for the middle and latter parts of next week.
Let's turn our attention to South America and Brazil in particular. It's been a big talking point among traders looking at the northern part of Brazil, Mato Grosso in particular, that they're off to a dry start. Should we be concerned?
Well, I think yes and no. Climatologically speaking, the delayed rains are not that significant. Normally, we see scattered showers in early October, and it becomes more generalized in late October. Instead, this year we'll run 2 weeks later with no rain in the first half of the month and scattered showers in the second half with better rains in November. But because the Brazilians try so hard to plant two crops in their growing season, waiting until late October, early November to get this first crop in the ground is not good news for them.
Thank you, Drew.
Have a great day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.